Sales Enablement Society, Stories from the Trenches, where enablement practitioners share their real-world experiences. Get the scoop on what's happening inside sales enablement teams across the global SES member community. Each segment of Stories from the Trenches share the good, the bad, and the ugly practices of corporate sales enablement initiatives. Learn what worked, what didn't work, and how obstacles were eliminated by corporate teams and leadership. Sit back, grab a cold one, and join host Paul Butterfield, Vice President of Sales Enablement at Instructure, for casual conversations about the wide and varied profession of sales enablement, where there is never a one-size-fits-all solution.
Welcome back to Stories from the Trenches, the Sales Enablement Society podcast, where we invite people that do what we all do every day to come and share their experiences and the ways that they're finding success, especially in this environment we find ourselves in post-COVID. You know, the sales enablement mission hasn't changed, but the tactics and the way that we're doing it have in so many ways. And so today, I'm excited to welcome Misha McPherson. Misha is the head of global enablement for Coursera. So welcome, Misha, and maybe introduce yourself.
So first of all, Paul, I'm so excited to be a part of this podcast. You and I have known each other for quite some time now, and I love the mission of this. A little bit about myself. I have been in sales enablement for a very long time. I have to go back to look, but probably around the range of like 11 to 12 years at this point. I'm currently the global head of sales enablement for Coursera, which is a company that I believe in so strongly. And I'm also a facilitator for SASE sales enablement, running the first workshop for sales enablement practitioners.
And I will just give the SASE workshops a plug. I think now I have sent members of my team to your sales enablement boot camps and workshops for, what, 3 or 4 years? I know we've sent a number of people through. And they come back raving. So, in fact, we've got some people in the midst right now.
I love your people who come through. It really is. I created the workshop that I wish somebody had given me.
That's the best way to look at it. All right. So, before we get into our topic today, you and I were talking beforehand, and we got kind of talking about what is our bucket list for the day that we get a vaccine or COVID ends or whatever that ends up looking like, right? What's our bucket list? So what is number one on what you are looking forward to running out and doing when that day comes?
It's so funny because I never thought I would say this, but I cannot wait to be on a plane. That sounds amazing. I miss traveling so much. Pre-COVID, not only did I travel quite a bit for work, but I also traveled quite a bit for myself as well. Mm-hmm. And I miss being out there in the world so much.
I agree. We had two different holiday plans that we had to scrap this year, like so many people did. But just the other day, I was even realized I miss London. I didn't always appreciate being gone a lot, but I was there often enough that I'm missing it now. So I look forward to when that happens again.
This is the first year in about a decade that I have not spent. I usually spend about a month a year in New York, just from different mm-hmm. Different meetings. I miss London. I miss New York, and I miss all the little places. You know, all the places that you just don't end up going to on mm-hmm. on a regular basis. I miss the people. I miss the food. I miss the smells. At this point, I miss the security lines. I miss it all.
Wow, you really do miss it. All right. So one of the things that, at least in my opinion, you've really developed some expertise expertise is the right word, in is the early stages of sales enablement. Someone has just been hired as the first full-time sales enablement resource in a company that, you know, is now grown to the size where they need that. How should that person go about setting priorities and setting their strategy while they're, you know, an army of one? And then we'll get into what happens when they start scaling. But what do they do right out of the gate, or what should they think about?
I love that question. So much of it depends on what's actually happening within that company, right? There's not one formula. What I typically look at is, where is the company going to be in 6 months to a year? And what's currently broken? And I know that there's that whole saying, we're not the fixers of broker things and all these different things. But the reality is that when we hire sales enablement for the first time, it's typically they have waited too long to hire, which means that there are a lot of things that are broken that need to be fixed. So looking forward, right, looking into 6 months from now, looking into a year from now, what's going to be happening in the company? Is it rapid growth? Do we have a lot of underperformance, which is going to cause a really bad board meeting in 6 months? What's happening that we need to really have our eye on as far as proactive strategies and thoughts? And then at the same time, what does the landscape look like today? Do we have good onboarding? Do we have good go-to-market training? Do we have good alignment from sales and marketing and people ops and sales ops and all the groups that really have to work together as one? I think all of those questions are good questions to ask ourselves. What's the landscape today? What are we trying to accomplish? And then that creates a priority list by its very nature. What that does is it cleans out all the excess noise. Right. It cleans out all of the annoying things that are broken that are just not going to hit our priority list because it's not going to impact future or it's not going to impact the big issues within the landscape today.
All right. And give me some things to think about there. You know, it occurs to me while you're talking about that some of those would be very smart questions to ask while you're actually interviewing for that sales enablement position. Do you agree?
No, I completely agree. But it's funny, I'm interviewing for my team right now. And I'm surprised by how many people have not asked questions like that. I suspect when you interview, when I interview, actually, you and I have interviewed together before. When we have interviews, we have a lot of those questions of what's the landscape today and where's the future taking us? What are we trying to accomplish? And I'm always surprised when I ask the question to people who are interviewing, what questions do you have? They never ask that, or they rarely ask those questions. And I think those are the most essential questions for them to know the answers to in terms of whether or not they want the job. Different future strategies, different current landscape issues will have a huge part in what their day-to-day job is going to look like. And so they should ask those questions because they're interviewing us as much as we're interviewing them.
I agree. When someone comes in and they are setting the stage for sales enablement for the first time, in my experience, they have the opportunity to help sales enablement be seen as a strategic function from the outset, which is a whole different thing. We could do a whole separate session on that. But at the same time, because they are the first sales enablement function, it seems, again, my experience, you have to find some quick wins to establish the function, to establish credibility and that sort of thing. Do you agree? And if so, what are some quick wins that people should look at?
So I think that is such a great question to ask because I think a lot of it depends on the leader and what their expectations are, what their experience has been with sales enablement. Often we still find that sales leaders or the leaders who are hiring enablement don't have a lot of experience working with enablement in the past. So they don't know themselves what those quick wins are. What I really like to see is a quick win that is tied specifically to future strategic growth, right? So again, you know, are we looking at rapid growth, underperformance, or are we trying to focus on predictable growth within the organization? That helps us really lean into what we need to work on. If we're leaning in rapid growth, 90% of the time that's onboarding. 90% of the time when I come into companies, they don't have a strong onboarding program in place, which means that what I'm interested in is not necessarily that the reps don't have anything to do in the first week. What I'm concerned about is that they're not going to ramp predictably 3 months from now, 6 months from now. And then we might have even made the wrong hire in general, in which case then we're wasting almost a year of time with the wrong person in the seat and then rehiring that position, that territory going unfilled, et cetera. So I think it really ties back to the answer to your question is the quick win is the thing that's most tied to what's actually going to drive success for the company and for the revenue org as a whole.
And you asked about my opinion. It would really be somewhat corollary to what you just said, because when you come in, there likely is no baseline assessment. If you're lucky, RevOps or SalesOps can give you some baselining on ramping, and if you're lucky, ramping and you know, quota cycles and that sort of thing. In a small company, I wouldn't even count on that. But you, as the sales enablement person, can create a sales assessment rubric. You don't need anything fancy. It can be done in a spreadsheet. And it can be as simple as identifying what are the sales skills by stage of the sales process in the company, and then having the list of salespeople down the left, and then just coding the cells so that all the sales leader has to do is go in for each person, go across, and put a 1, 2, or 3 in the box, which then colors it red, yellow, green. I have found that to be visually very useful to figure out quickly where the sales leaders see the gaps. And then you can take that and do the things that you talked about.
I love that. That's I'm going to steal that. And it's funny. I mean, how often do you find it's discovery?
Right. Right.
Like the skill that they're always weak on, it's always discovery. Yeah. Not always, but I find a company that's not the issue.
And even when they don't say it's discovery, there's usually work to be done in discovery. So.
Exactly.
Okay. That's great advice. You're getting out of the gate, you're ramping. And let's go with your scenario of a company with rapid growth, right? Especially in SaaS, growth is king. You're just going to keep that accelerator pressed, which means onboarding, hopefully not as much churn. It's just growth onboarding. What should you be thinking? What this new sales are not by now, they're maybe a year or so in the job. The company is growing, or the sales team, at least, and marketing functions are, so that it's time to start looking at some scale. How should they, I guess I'd say, be thinking about and going about identifying what's the second hire and what would they be focused on and that sort of thing?
So I think it's really important that you're having the conversation before you even begin, or as an early conversation of when we're actually going to start scaling. What are some of the indicators that it's time? And that might be by the growth of the team. It might be because of certain performances. It might be because of the types of people that you're hiring. But regardless of what the answer is, having an agreement up front of not just in 6 months we're going to hire, but when we have hired, you know, X number of people more, or we have X number of managers who have less than 2 years of experience managing, et cetera, so that you're not shooting yourself in the foot. Because what I find is that companies wait too long to scale out their sales enablement teams, both to have the conversation, and then it takes a long time to actually scale out the company.
I agree with everything you just said. But that could be a tricky conversation to navigate. Here, you're still either interviewing for the job how do you bring up, when do I get to hire somebody? Which I know that's not how you do it, but how do you navigate that conversation? It seems like it's a little tricky.
It is. Yeah. And that's when it comes down to what type of interview are you having, right? Mm-hmm. Are you having an interview where they're just asking you questions? Or are you having an interview where the two of you are having a discussion about the future of the company and of sales enablement as a whole? So as somebody who is experienced, if they don't have a sales enablement team in place, they're hiring that first hire, they are looking for somebody who actually knows what they're doing. And so as part of that, I think it's appropriate to have the conversation about the growth and about your skills and about all these different things. And then upfront recommend, you know, sales enablement is an amazing role. We cannot do everything all at the same time. So based on your growth, and then give it back to them what they're actually looking for in terms of growth, I think it looks like we're probably going to need to make the first hire to the team in 3 to 6 months. How do you feel about that? Or is the company prepared to support that? Or, you know, something along those lines. So it's a conversation and a recommendation. A true recommendation, right? So mm-hmm. we should not recommend that they add to the team unless there's a specific reason. But if there's a specific reason, like they're expecting to grow revenue by, you know, a certain dollar amount, or if they're expecting to increase headcount by a certain dollar amount, if the product marketing team, sales ops team is under populated right now, if they have a lot of under experienced managers, there's a thousand reasons why we do need to expand the sales enablement team. So it really is, it's just about giving a recommendation, and their answer is going to be interesting, right? Because sometimes the answer is going to be like, well, no. We really just want to hire the one sales enablement person. That tells you a lot about that job. Do you still want that job?
And I think it tells you a lot about how they view the job, which is going to. So would one of those triggers or factors that you're talking about include global expansion?
Absolutely.
Plans for global expansion, I guess you'd say. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Because at the end of the day, global expansion, there's a lot of nuances to global expansion that are really interesting, including how you sell into those. So the simple problems are things like time zones, right? You know, the time zones can be quite radically different. It gets even more interesting, though, when you start looking at what are the nuances to selling into one country versus the other. What are the nuances of the culture of that team, of one team, one location versus the other? What about the management styles of the different? There's so much that goes into globally scaling at your company. We really need to think about how we can do that global growth well, right? So how do we, you know, where do we need to focus our time and energy? And what that often leads to is sales enablement is really good in general about going wide. We have learned how to stretch. You know, I am 5'1", but I think I've got the wingspan of at least 7 or 8 feet at this point. But why doesn't help us build great sales enablement? We have to go deep. And when you're talking about globally growing, going deep requires a lot of focus on those different geos. So those are some of the things I start thinking about scaling in terms of, you know, how much revenue are we actually expecting to drive out of each large geo? So not country by country necessarily, but by EMEA, APAC, you know, LATAM, North America. So when we start thinking about, you know, how much revenue that is going to help us quite a bit in terms of thinking about how much do we actually want to invest in those geos.
Our Chris Bradman, who is our GM for APAC, in different meetings I'm in with him, I find that he frequently has to remind the rest of the company that APAC is not a country. And to your point, right, it gets really complicated in some of the regions if, depending on, again, are we going to start in, you know, ANZ? Are we going to start in the Southeastern Asia? Are we going to try to take on the whole Pacific Rim? I mean, it can get really complicated. The next thing that our conversation makes me think of is, hopefully you've had these conversations in the interview. Hopefully it's been part of your, you were able to set those expectations going in. What happens if you are in the role, or what do you suggest if someone's in the role now, for whatever reason, those conversations didn't happen, or they did, and that leader has moved on, and there's new leaders, all kinds of reasons, and now those resources are not available to you?
In terms of, you know, not being available to us, there's lots of different ways of scaling, right? So you can scale through headcount. You can scale through not growing through headcount. You can throw money at this issue from many, many different angles, right? So step number one, I think part of our job is really to highlight the pros and the cons and the dangers, right? Part of our job is to look around the corners and say, you know, hey, these are the things that are going to happen next if we don't take care of them today. So step one is having those strategic conversations of, you know, look, here are some of the things that are happening right now that I think are leading at indicators that we're going to have a problem 3 months from now, 6 months from now, et cetera. Those are usually tied to either revenue growth or underperformance. So if we highlight those issues, then the next part is how do we solve it? One part of it is we grow out the team. The second part is we might have to bring in outside resources. We might have to bring in, you know, for example, we might have to not build a sales methodology internally. We might have to go externally and bring a sales methodology in. And there's lots of good reasons to bring in a sales methodology. But that under resourcing headcount might be one of them. Bringing in additional resources in terms of outside trainers, outside messaging companies, outside the amount of people that you can bring in to support that are not full-time headcount is endless. My short answer to that, though, is the money will be spent one way or the other, or we're going to run into that wall. So it really kind of depends on, do we want to put that towards headcount and internal resources?
Right.
We want to put that externally and using outside resources, or do we want to hit that wall?
I think, or Mike's, you know, in fact, I have done this already this year and looking to do it again, that sometimes it just makes sense to bring in, it's that build versus buy conversation, to bring in someone who that is what they do and they're really good at it. Parachuting in, evaluating what the organization and helping the existing sales enablement team scope out a sales playbook and then project managing that to a successful conclusion with the sales enablement team. And if this is what they do all the time, they can probably get it done in 60 days, as opposed to trying to figure out all those elements completely in-house. I think in my experience is sometimes that's more efficient. You have to look at, okay, we're spending the money, but what's the opportunity cost to having the enablement team figure it out completely on their own versus what they could be working on while we bring in this source to help drive the project with their expertise?
Build versus buy conversation so much because I agree on all of those points. And it's funny, you know, I'm a huge advocate for building. And I also, like right now, for sure, we're likely buying.
Yeah.
There's really good reasons for it, right? So I think with sales enablement, the moment you put your stake down the ground, you say, this is the one way, is the moment I stop listening. Because there's not one way in sales enablement. It's so much of it is driven by the internal makeup of the company and what the needs are. That if you try to do it one way, you're just gonna fail, unless you just join the same company again and again and again.
That sounds like Groundhog Day.
It does.
Yeah. So Misha, we both know a number of very talented and even experienced sales enablement professionals whose jobs were impacted by the economy in the pandemic environment that we've been in these last few months. So for those that are still working in their full-time sales enablement function and maybe have a team that they're trying to look out for, do you have any suggestions for what they should be focusing on or upping the game a little bit so that sales enablement continues to be seen as an essential part of the go-to-market strategy while companies are examining every aspect of their budgets?
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually, if you don't mind, I'm going to answer it from two perspectives.
Great.
Because it's also important to talk to for those of whom were impacted and lost their jobs, right?
Great.
So for starters, it's for people who've lost their jobs. Don't give up hope. Please don't give up hope. There are so many companies that are hiring. I was not supposed to be able to hire for my own team this year, and I just got 3 headcount approved. So companies, I think for people who are out of work, pay very close attention to the types of companies that are going to overperform during times like COVID. So Paul, your company is a company like that. My company is a company like that. There's going to be a lot of companies in a lot of different industries that are actually going to, sadly enough, benefit from COVID because of the type of products and solutions that they have. So don't give up hope. Focus on the type of company. And then for those of us who are inside the company going through it, but maybe at one of those companies that are struggling a little bit more, I think this is the time for us to just double down and get really good at what sales enablement is supposed to do. I think that this is very much in line with the companies who are doing well right now are really focusing in on who their ideal company profile is and who their ideal buyer profile. You can't just scattershot. You really have to be really focused on where you spend your time and attention if you are a rep. Same thing for sales enablement. Are we doing activities that are close to the dollar? Are we doing activities that are going to either help increase revenue or who are going to decrease costs? And those are the two things we're really good at, increasing revenue and decreasing costs. So are we directly impacting that, and can we show it? That ties back to what metrics are we looking at as we think about programs and sessions and things like that. So I think as long as we are really, really focused on driving activities that either increase revenue or decrease costs, and what the company is going to care about is going to depend on what the company is going through right now. If they're looking to decrease cost, the worst thing that they can do is get rid of sales enablement. The best thing that they can do is they can have a team that's really focusing in on how do we decrease the sales cycle? How do we decrease sales that are lost to competitors? How can we decrease time spent with wrong reps in the role? How can we decrease ramp so people are productive faster? You know, there's a thousand metrics that we can look at that are directly tied to cutting costs within a revenue org. So I think if we're seen as the organization that's really focusing on that and driving results, I think we should be very safe.
I like that. Thank you. Thank you for those insights. I always like to end these sessions with the same question. And that is, what is the number one thing that you wish you could go back and tell yourself early in your career, from any sort of, you know, career advice or things that you've learned? What would you want young Misha to know? Not that you're not young now, younger Misha, how about that?
Oh, I wish I could go back and tell myself so many different things. But one of the things that I really struggled with for a long time, and this is true in both enablement and in the rest of my career, which has all been in sales, is really understanding the difference between authority versus influence and how I can use both. And so what I mean by that is early on in my career, I hit my head against the wall on things that I could not change because I just wanted to change them. Mm-hmm. Not taking into account the fact that I could influence that change by working with different stakeholders to get those changes made. That is a much more productive use of time. That is much more likely to lead to success. And if I had learned earlier how to drive consensus around decision making, if I had learned earlier how to really figure out who do I need to influence in order to get what I want done, mm-hmm. I would have been successful earlier. I would have spent much less time being frustrated in my roles. I just overall, that's the thing that it's taken me a long time to learn, and I'm still continuing to learn today.
That's great advice. Go ahead.
Has anybody ever asked you that question yourself? I'd be so curious what your answer to that is. Or is that a season finale?
Season finale. No, actually, I don't know what the season finale is yet. I know what next month is, but we're still working on year end. Let me think about that for a second. For me... In earlier stages of my career, and again, for me, that is mostly, you know, was all in sales. In fact, my business was in sales and sales leadership way longer than sales enablement. It's a concept for Stephen Covey has that he calls the emotional bank account. And the concept is pretty simple. Knowing that any relationship you're in is going to at some point require emotional withdrawals, find ways to proactively make deposits. And over time, if you're good at doing that, it makes the rough spots a lot easier to get through, whether these are work relationships, personal relationships, that sort of thing. That would have been really, and I'm still not perfect at it, but it's something that I try really hard to do. And I have found that it makes a difference. But I was too much of trying to be, one man show. Back then. And I wish I'd understood that better.
That is a great answer. I love that. That is a good whole life answer too.
And you're the first person to ever pose a question back on me. So thank you. This has been a great session. I know that there are multiple things here for any of our listeners to take away. And so I want to thank you for your time, Misha, today. And we've been speaking with Misha McPherson, the head of global sales enablement for Coursera. We've been talking about how to create a new sales enablement program in a small or smallish environment and how to go about scaling it and some of the different implications from that. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. I know I have, and I look forward to seeing you all next time on Stories from the Trenches.
Thanks for joining this episode of Stories from the Trenches. For more sales enablement resources, be sure to join the Sales Enablement Society at www.sesociety.org. That's www.sesociety.org.